This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. I am not Steve Bertrand. I'm John Hansen filling in for him for the next hour. We got a lot to talk about today. 312-981-7200. I always like to have like a poll question of are you done or whatever it might be. But today I want to know, have you done all your Christmas shopping? Have you donated to the economy? Have you really done your job yet? Is your Christmas shopping done? Give us a text, 312-981-7200. It's because I'm guilty of the fact that none of my Christmas shopping is done. Ben Meyerson, is your shopping done for the holiday yet?
I think it is. I hope nobody bought Bitcoin.
Look at that. Now, that's a good segue to the first story. Okay, so Bitcoin is on everyone's mind. We're all talking about it. It's volatile. It's jumping up and down kind of as we speak. What has the recent couple of hours been like for Bitcoin?
It went through a major crash in the last 24 hours. It dropped like 30 or 40%. Now it's back up again, but trading is like frozen mm-hmm. on a couple of the bigger exchanges. It's just going nuts right now.
I think Bitcoin is one of those things that everyone knows that it exists, but not for sure exactly what it is. Can you describe in one sentence for people that are late to the Bitcoin party, one or two sentences, what is Bitcoin?
It's a digital currency that basically exists entirely on manufactured scarcity. So mm-hmm. it's instead of just saying, hey, you have one imaginary dollar, it's more like, hey, you have one imaginary dollar and there are only 40,000 more of these out there, but it's limited to that amount. So because it's scarce, there's value.
And you can use Bitcoin to pay for some things, to buy some things, but not a ton of stuff yet, right?
Yeah, there was kind of a wave when it first was launched where people started trying to use it as currency and you can go to an ATM and get one.
Right.
Or you could go buy pizza or sushi or some stuff. But mm-hmm. because of the crazy rise in volatility this year, there's been a lot less of that. People are stepping back. It's like, well, I don't really want to pay for sushi dinner in this currency.
Right.
You know, I might be worth $100 now, but it might be worth $1,000.
Right.
Tomorrow.
So why would I use this for sushi when I can just hold on to it and see what happens? So one interesting aspect is that nonprofits are starting to get into the Bitcoin game, right?
Yeah, it's essentially like anything else. Folks who are charity-minded might be donating some of their currency, perhaps to offset some of the massive tax liability they have from the crazy rise this year.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of charities are saying, yeah, okay, you can give that to us. But there's, as we've seen today in the past week with the crazy mm-hmm. rises and falls, there's some risk involved with that. But we wrote an article on Blue Sky Innovation earlier this week talking about how, aside from just the minting money and crazy rises and falls that I just mentioned, there's some value to the underlying technology. So basically, the way that Bitcoin works is it's got this really interesting system that bakes in exactly who owns a Bitcoin and who and when do they own it.
Okay.
Because that's how it would work. Because otherwise, how else are they going to know, oh, okay, I gave my Bitcoin to this person. There's got to be a system baked in there to really track that succinctly so that it actually works.
Mm-hmm.
But when you take that technology and think about how it might work for other things, it's being used actually as a really interesting and really kind of state-of-the-art new way of tracking the supply chain. So places like Walmart are using it. IBM is using it to track like where a banana is going and stuff like that.
So the underlying kind of nuts and bolts of the tracking of the Bitcoin itself is a valuable resource to charities and nonprofits?
Exactly. So imagine, so you donate something to, say, the Red Cross.
Okay.
Or there's a couple of other places out there that are focusing on this specifically, like the BitGive Foundation and their thing they just launched called GiveTrack. The basic idea behind it is you could donate a Bitcoin somewhere or you could donate cash somewhere and you could track exactly where your donation is going at any given time. A lot of people are skeptical about, okay, where's my donation going? If I make a donation, is it actually going to hurricane relief or mm-hmm. is it actually going to building a well in Africa or something like that? But you don't really know. You take the charity's word for it. But if it's based on Bitcoin's base technology, which is called blockchain,
mm-hmm.
You can track exactly where your donation is going and when it's gotten there, which is kind of pretty cool. You can see, okay, it went to buy, you know, a quarter of my donation went to buy shovels and a quarter of it went to buy bricks. And you can actually see that and document it really cleanly. So it's really interesting. And a lot of charities are actually looking into that underlying technology, again, called blockchain, as a way that could change the game for them.
Well, I imagine that if you give money or you give give Bitcoin, whatever you're giving to a charity, there's that tangible benefit. If you see where that is going, you're more likely to give it again. It kind of gives you a little bit more of a payoff.
Totally.
That's very interesting. I think I understand that, Ben. Very good job. Very good job. Let's talk about Tovala, and this is a Chicago-based company that... Explain what a Tovala is.
So it's a smart oven.
Okay.
They're not a microwave. They say they want to replace your microwave.
Okay.
It's a countertop device, though. It is about the size of a microwave. But instead of using radiation to heat your food, what it does is it's essentially a steam oven, which is this technology that goes back to the 1800s, basically. So this smart oven will alternately steam, use a little bit of a convection baking technology. It's got some broiling technology baked in. No pun intended.
And how much does one of these things cost?
It costs $400.
So it's more expensive than your everyday microwave. Although that's still a price point that I think a lot of people would want. I mean, that's not too bad.
It is. Yeah, I think.
I mean, it's a lot of money. Don't get me wrong, but it's going to cook all your meals for you.
Yeah, and they've got a meal service also, that like a subscription meal service. There's the rub there.
Mm-hmm.
And if you subscribe to their meal service, they'll give you a discount on the device.
So you can use it for cooking whatever you want to cook, but if you buy from their food products, it comes with, like, I imagine, set instructions or a code or something that makes it really easy to cook.
Yeah, actually, all you do is you scan the code on the meal, and it'll automatically cook the meal exactly how it's supposed to be cooked. They just raised a bunch of money this week, and I talked to their CEO, and he said, I asked him about the Instant Pot, which is the big craze this holiday season this year. It's
right.
Been hyped up, and it's really popular. And, you know, I think there might be one showing up around my house in the future, the Instant Pot.
Did you buy it for someone, but it's really for yourself?
It might appear somehow. We'll see.
That's always a smart move.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's going to happen is the CEO says, you know, we've been really heartened by the rise of the Instant Pot this year, and we hope that it's kind of blazing the trail for people to introduce new appliances into their kitchen that maybe they might not have been open to in the past.
Yeah, I see. And I'm a huge Crock-Pot guy, so I'm willing to give Instant Pot a chance. Okay, really quickly, about 30 seconds to talk about the Label Insight, a Chicago-based company, raised $21 million. And these are labels that actually go onto food products on the shelves, and you're able to, tell what is exactly in each product?
So it's like a business-to-business product. So essentially what it is it's this company that works with manufacturers and retailers to basically act as an interchange of what's actually in the stuff that you buy on the shelves. So basically, like your Jewel or their parent company, Albertsons, will work with Procter & Gamble.
Okay.
And they'll say, okay, you know, send us the information for what's inside, let's say, Ocean Spray.
Okay.
Which is not a Unilever brand, but
right.
You know. So then when you go to the store, the Jewel folks, you can ask, say, hey, I'm allergic to, you know, artificial color blue.
Okay.
And they can look up, the store rep can look up and say, oh, actually, this is in this product.
So it's not an actual label that's on the product itself?
No, what it does is it takes the labels from products and analyzes them.
Okay, and you still have to go to someone at the store to ask for that sort of thing.
The store gets that information from the manufacturer through Label Insight. Mm-hmm. Chicago company just raised $21 million this week. And because of their technology, the store folks will have a lot more information about what's in the product.
Which is useful. We all want transparency these days.
Indeed.
Ben, we are out of time. Where can people find out more information about what you do and all of the Blue Sky Innovation stuff?
BlueSkyInnovation.com or ChicagoTribune.com/BlueSky. They both work.
All right. Have a great holiday, Ben, okay?
Thank you, John.
Thanks for joining me. And say hi to your dad, too.
Will do.
John Hansen filling in for Steve Bertrand on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Steve was in yesterday, and he felt a little under the weather, so he basically got everyone sick and then took today off because he's feeling a little bit sick himself. 312-981-7200. Want to know if you finished your Christmas shopping or not yet. Someone texted in, why did you wait so long to shop? Because I haven't done many of mine. Did you hear about Amazon, Walmart, etc.? Yes, I know about those things. I just didn't do it. And yes, I'm questioning why I waited so long. And next year I'll say I'm going to do it early. I promise I will. And then I guarantee that I will again be hosting the business lunch and needing to shop again as Christmas approaches. Okay, so I think everyone has heard about I guess we can call it a scandal, that iPhone finally admitted that it slows down old phones. They don't say it's for the same reasons that a lot of people accuse them for, but it brings up an interesting discussion about business transparency. So we've got Tom Gimble. He joins Steve every Friday, the CEO of LaSalle Network. Tom, thanks for joining us here today.
Hey, absolutely. Good to be with you. And I haven't finished up my shopping yet either.
Good. See, I don't feel so bad anymore. If you haven't, and you're a business giant, Tom Gimble, and if you haven't done it, I don't feel so bad anymore.
All right, in the same boat this weekend. Go ahead.
All right, let's talk about the iPhone situation and really broaden it out to about business transparency. You know, there were reports that iPhones, everyone's kind of been skeptical that old iPhones get slower and slower, and it's a mechanism for you to buy new ones. There was a report out earlier this year that said just that. Apple denied it for so long. They finally have said, yes, in fact, some of this is true, not admitting not a full mea culpa, but saying sorts of things. And so, Tom, I wonder, you know, with everything being transparent, we want to know where all of our food comes from nowadays. We want to know everything. Is it smarter for businesses to be as transparent, not just when they get caught for doing something maybe wrong or unethical, but is it important for businesses to be transparent all the time?
Well, there's different levels of transparency, right? So there's transparency to their employee base, and then there's transparency to their clients. So is there true transparency when you buy a car of how much that car is costing and what they're doing to move cars from this year's model to last year's model, or warranty programs? I mean, I'm not necessarily saying I'm on Apple's side. I have one, and mine's been slow for the past couple of months, so I have the consumer angst. But if we're going to drill down on everything, let's not single out Apple because so many people have iPhones. When it hits us in every single industry, there was a case this week that came out that Facebook will target their advertising for their new jobs listings towards certain demographics. And is that age discrimination by Facebook for where they're running their ads?
Yeah, and you're right. There's so many different levels and questions. Obviously, we're not looking for the keys to the candy store with technology, these sorts of things. But anywhere where there might be this ethical gray area. And my thing is, I'm fine with what Apple does. You know, I'm always usually on the side of the business. Hey, they can tell us whatever they want to tell us as long as they're not breaking the law. That's completely up to them. But I think businesses these days want to be transparent, not just out of the goodness of their hearts, but I think it's probably a better business model. They'll make more money in the long run through customer loyalty and that transparency.
Yes. However, the question becomes, and this is where you really don't know what their costs are to support different technologies. And so is it, if you're running an iPhone 6, does it cost more money with servers, with bandwidth, with what have you? You know, we're going to leap right into net neutrality, right?
Mm-hmm.
And are the cable systems really going to tell us how much bandwidth we're really using when they charge us more based on how much Netflix you download, so on and so forth? So there's a lot of gray area, and, you know, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I do think it's very similar to buying a car or a new air conditioner or any old school manufactured piece of equipment that we don't know the insides of that either. And how do we feel when the car breaks down 30 days after the warranty expires?
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. I wonder if companies start to see more success if they kind of view the customer as almost like an extension of their internal operations team. You know what I'm saying? Like as if they are kind of part of the process of the business. And if that will breed customer loyalty just by kind of unveiling the curtain a little bit behind the scenes of what's going on.
I think when we're talking about companies at the volume and the size of an Apple, I think the horse is out of the barn. And it's kind of like people complain about Microsoft and the browser crashing and the lack of security and the problems with Word and Excel, but yet Microsoft still makes so much money, and the majority of it comes from Microsoft Office just being deployed and redeployed with a new version every couple of years. And it's the same thing with the iPhone. Is you're right in theory that if you're a small or medium-sized business, you grow through having brand ambassadors who love your product. When you get to a point where you're the iPhone, and let's face it, what the iPhone is today is really almost what AT&T was 40 years ago.
Right, right. Is this a symptom? Yeah, absolutely. And I guess, Tom, the last question we have, and we're a little short on time today, is this just a byproduct of the day and the life that we lead now, this constant communication, this information overflow, TV channel after TV channel devoted just to business news and discussions just like this one? Are we just demanding, I don't know if it's too much, but is that just, this is just the transparency issue is only around today because of this sharing of information so rapidly?
100% agree that anytime there is one inch of a problem, it gets magnified to fill up the business news cycle. And so we magnify it because we have nothing else, just like we do in sports, just like we do in gossip, and then now it's becoming in business.
Tom Gimbel, the CEO of LaSalle Network. Get that shopping done, Tom, okay?
You too. Good luck to you and happy hour.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll try and make it work. I'm getting scolded on the text line, Bennett, 312-981-7200. No one is happy with me that I waited to the last minute to do their shopping. I think there's other people out there that haven't done their Christmas shopping yet. I think what is really striking is that we're celebrating Christmas in about 4 hours. So I'm really under the gun here to get it done. Okay, Mark Levine is the chairman at the Illinois State Board of Investment. He's our next guest. Mark, thanks for joining us here today.
Thanks for having me.
And I got Levine right?
You did.
Just making sure. Okay, just making sure. All right, tell us what the Illinois State Board of Investment is. You guys have a lot of responsibility.
Yeah, we do. So what we do is we manage the money that's invested on behalf of the state pension system for state employees. We don't do teachers. We don't do university, which is also generally part of the state pension system. Ours are state employees, and there are about 120,000 of them. We manage $18 billion in assets for what people think of as a typical pension system. We also manage $4 billion in a 401k-style plan for the same 120,000 state employees.
So pensions obviously are a term that get thrown around. That word has a lot of volatility to it itself. People feeling like the pensions can't be paid out. They're a burden, blah, blah, blah. But you guys aren't part of you didn't make the promises. You're just taking that money and trying to make more of it, essentially.
That's exactly right. And we have to do that as responsibly as we can. But no, we don't have anything to do with what I refer to as the pension liabilities or the kind of the benefit side of it. Those promises were made many, many years ago. They were made, you know, really irresponsibly. We all know that, and that's why Illinois is in the crisis that it's in. We just take the money that's been taken out of people's paychecks, as well as, now the majority of the money actually comes from Illinois taxpayers, and we try to invest it as responsibly as we can for the long term.
So as the chairman of the board, you've been on the board for a couple years and named chairman like 2 years ago now, right, at this point?
About 2.25 years ago, I was elected chair. I've been on the board for 3 years.
What changes have you made that you're proud of?
So what we're most proud of is we've really created, I think, the pension fund. We call it pension fund 2.0, sort of the right way to manage a pension fund. And any pension fund across America could follow our model. What we have is an index and outsource model. So instead of having super complicated like rosters of hundreds and hundreds of different money managers doing this and that, and it all kind of negates each other, we mostly index. We take 2/3 of the assets we manage and we index them. Right. And this is something that your listeners can do themselves. And it's really the best way to invest. It's so simple. Now, the fact is we're an $18 billion entity. So we have access to certain investments that not everybody does. Mm-hmm. And we're going to take advantage of that. And we do that with, again, about 1/3 of our assets, private. These are mostly private market type assets. And for those, the model that we've used is instead of trying to build some huge government staff, which really never kind of works out, mm-hmm. we have 3 strategic partners. And these are, kind of best in breed. We use them to select managers for us. So for our board, we can very easily monitor these 3 partners. The rest is indexed. It's an easy model to manage. And by the way, in doing that, we've materially increased our expected returns, and we've taken the risk of the fund down.
So we've had such a good year on the market. I know a lot of people looking at their 401ks, they're super happy, but with happiness comes worry. Your guys is doing it in a responsible way. Obviously, you're aware of the good year we've had and things along those lines. Is there anything you guys do to prepare for if a bubble were to burst? Is it just like when you manage your own mutual funds that you just try and be cognizant and distribute correctly? And how does that work as you look to the next year or so?
Right. So obviously, we love markets going up because that's just more money. Our assets have gone from $16 billion to $18 billion just in the last year. That's terrific, okay? But that's really not what we're about. We're a long-term investor. We need to do it responsibly. We have to grow these assets, okay? So what we look at are returns not over 1 year, but rather over 10 or 20 years. If I was looking over 1 year, maybe I'd be a little bit nervous that the markets did as well as they did. Although, as I told you while we were off, while we were sort of off the mic, mm-hmm. I'm kind of net bullish, okay. Of kind of where we are. We're looking out 10, 20 years. And when you look out over 10, 20 years, equity markets tend to do quite well. That's another beautiful thing about indexing. Try not to get worked up with the daily movements, certainly not the daily movements, but even the annual movements. Looking at the markets over long periods of time, that's the winning strategy.
I was reading in one of your reports, we're talking about business transparency. You can find all this stuff online. You guys obviously have to publish all your information and what you guys do, which I think is important. People want to see where the money's going, of course, and how it's being allocated. But one of the things I was reading in the reports, and correct me if I'm wrong, it was you were changing the outlook and hoping to to go up 0.2% in annual growth over 10 years. And someone may look at that and say, oh, 0.2% That can't be that much. But you're talking, that's hundreds of millions of dollars over a year by just changing the way the funds are, you know, distributed or allocated correctly.
No, that's exactly right. So when we take cost out, which, you know, that might be 0.2%, it might be 0.5%, you know, it, those numbers in a look, if markets were generating 20% returns, maybe it wouldn't matter that much. Although, you know, to me, you sort of always have to be responsible. But when you're looking at returns, I mean, right now in fixed income, as an example, bonds are yielding, or yields are so low. Every 0.001% really matters. On the topic of transparency, the beautiful thing about the shift that we've made, which again, we're leading the nation in, okay, the shift we made to index funds is everybody out there knows the stocks that we're invested in, right? Because S&P actually publishes, and the MSCI, Russell, the index providers, they actually publish the stocks. So everyone knows what we're doing. There's no tricks.
Right.
There's no sort of special things. And the nice thing is the performance is terrific.
Mm-hmm. So I got to ask, because I always want to know on the personal side of things. So how many employees, by the way, how many accounts are we talking about here?
Okay, so as far as the beneficiaries that we manage money for, that's over 120,000.
That's a lot of people.
That's right, and a bunch of them are retired, and the rest, you know, are currently employed, and about half of them participate in our 401k type plan.
Okay, so you're the chairman. You have $18 billion in assets. These are what people are counting on for when they retire, that money is going to be there for them. 120,000 people. Does that keep you up at night, or do you enjoy that responsibility? Do you think of them when you're making these decisions about the individuals and how this will affect their lives moving forward? Or is that too much to think of?
I really love it. And here's why. So I've been in the investment world my whole life. I started out as an accountant, and I worked for banks and had my own sort of boutique bank. And so I come out of this world. We're doing it. I sort of trust my judgment. We have a 9-person board. We've got terrific people really across the board, and we've got a great staff. I really enjoy the responsibility, and I was mentioning to you earlier. You know, there was one day last year we actually moved $2.5 billion out of active managers that were, you know, kind of mediocre and really weren't adding any value for our fund and for our beneficiaries. And at the end of the day, we sort of, you know, we were all kind of leaning back in our chairs, and it was really sort of fascinating. Think, well, holy cow, we just moved $2.5 billion in one day. But it was really a sense of achievement.
Right. I bought a pound of coffee for about $16, which was $3 more than I normally spend, and it drove me crazy for a week. So I cannot even fathom that sort of responsibility, but it seems like you enjoy it, and a good year, and a good outlook. What's one last thing that people should know about what you guys do and the responsibilities that you have as kind of a final thought for what the Illinois State Board of Investment, well, how you guys are feeling about the next few years and so?
Okay, I mean, to me, the most important thing about us is that we're always putting our beneficiaries, this board in particular, is always putting the beneficiaries ahead of these sort of Wall Street firms, these money managers. We're not kind of just this fee generator mm-hmm. to support the money management industry. We're doing things as simple and transparent as possible, and we're doing it actually generating great returns at the lowest, at truly responsible risks.
All right, Mark, have you finished your shopping?
Thanks for asking. So I'm staring right now at the Apple store, and now my wife may be listening, so maybe we'll leave it there. But you might peer out the window and
right.
see me.
And see you running on
across.
Over there? That sounds good. Mark, thanks so much for joining
us
today.
Thanks so much.
All right, more coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch after this. This is a big story that broke out this week that a lot of people have been talking and wondering about. A lot of questions out there. People are texting in their questions. And so we thought we'd talk right to the horse's mouth. We're talking with Eric Zarnikow, the executive director at the Illinois Student Assistance Commission. Eric, thanks for joining us here today.
Sure, happy to be on.
So the College Illinois Fund, that's how a lot of people know the fund. Can you just really quickly remind people and listeners, for those that don't know, what you guys do or have done and how long you guys have been doing it and what you guys provide for people?
Sure. So College Illinois is a 529 prepaid tuition program. So it provides the same tax benefits like a 529 savings plan. And essentially, it's exactly what it sounds like. You are able to buy future semesters today at current contract prices. And the plan's been around since about 1999.
It's a great way to kind of ensure that you're paying a price that you know and you're comfortable with, instead of, I guess, gambling in 18 years of what the cost of college will be. So my question, the news that broke, first of all, how many people are enrolled in this right now?
We have over 30,000 accounts that are still outstanding for College Illinois.
So the news this week was that you're no longer establishing accounts. And I think the first question to ask is, why is that?
So the plan, you know, went through a challenging time from about 2000 to 2010, where we saw double-digit tuition and fee growth, and at the same time, we got hit by the Great Recession and the impact on investment accounts. So the plan has been underfunded for a period of time. So we made the decision. We've started a process talking with elected officials, the General Assembly, the Governor's Office, about how to address the unfunded liability in the plan. So we made a decision, since we were having those conversations, not to open for enrollment this fall, and basically we've put the enrollment period on hold at this point. So the plan is still open. We're continuing to pay, you know, benefits, pay people's tuition and fees as normal, but we are currently not open for enrollment.
Is this hold temporary? Is it indefinite? Do you anticipate eventually opening up more accounts?
So I'd say, you know, we're working with elected officials on how we can strengthen the plan. So our hope would be that once that strengthening occurs, that we would reopen the plan for the sale of new contracts.
Because I imagine that, so if you're paying college, because you guys obviously then pay for the tuition and you're collecting money from people that are paying in advance, I guess the ultimate question I would have is, if you're no longer receiving as much money from people in the current form, are you still able to pay for all the commitments that have already been made moving forward?
So the plan actually has a separate trust fund. So
okay.
There's a separate trust fund, College of Illinois Trust Fund, that's held in custody at Northern Trust. So all the money that contract holders have paid in and the earnings on that money are in that trust fund, and the trust fund can only be used to pay tuition and fee benefits and the cost of running the program. So we do an actuarial update each year as of June 30th, and as of June 30, 2017, we had over $900 million in that trust fund. And based on the actuarial update that we do with our independent actuaries, even if the plan were never to sell a new contract, we have enough money in the fund based on the actuarial assumptions to pay plan benefits through the year 2024.
Okay. Are there any commitments that would go beyond that that people need to be worried about? Like if they've already paid in and their students aren't going to go to college until after 2024, is that something people need to worry about now, or am I misunderstanding?
So I mentioned earlier, the plan is underfunded. So once again, the plan, however, is backed by what's called the moral obligation of the state. So if the plan were to ever run short of funds, we would submit that amount to the governor's office, or to the governor, and he or she would include that amount in their budget, and then it's up to the General Assembly to appropriate funds. So it's not, you know, it's not a guarantee by the state, but it's by what's called the moral obligation. So that's something that the General Assembly and the governor, when the plan was originally formed and the legislation passed, agreed to include as part of it. So it's backing, once again, it's called the moral obligation of the state. So it's not full faith and credit of the state, but it's backed by the moral obligation of the state.
Well, I imagine that's what has some people worried, because the state of politics in Illinois and the fact that it took so long to even pass a budget, and this obviously isn't your purview, but you could see why people are concerned.
You know, I'd say the plan, though, has always had strong bipartisan support. So the original legislation had very strong support from both sides of the aisle. I would say, too, our understanding is that the state does have other moral obligations, and our understanding is that they have never not paid a moral obligation of the state. So once again, it's not as good as full faith and credit, but it is something that is real.
We had a text, a specific question, and you can answer it as best as you can. This texter wants to know, I have one child, a sophomore in college, and a high school senior who we bought 8 semesters each through the plan. Are they guaranteed the funds will be there through their education through 2023? You mentioned 2024. So I imagine that you'd say, without saying a full guarantee, that if all the projections hold up, that through 2023, they'll be okay.
Yeah, I would say based on the actuarial projections, they would be okay. I would encourage people, we do have financial information on our website, which is collegeillinois.org. We do on our homepage, we have a program update, and there's a link to it right from our homepage. We also have all of our, you know, annual reports, our actuarial projections, our independent audits are included on our website. And once again, we do an actuarial update each year as of June 30. And typically that update is available in the fall. So I always encourage people, it's important to monitor what's going on. So I would encourage them periodically to go to our website, check out the program update, see if anything's changed. When the annual actuarial update is put up on the website, I would encourage people to go and take a look at it. Also, if people ever have questions, we have an 800 number, which is 877-877-3724 that they can call. And they can also email us at isac.529help@illinois.gov.
You obviously want people to be informed and to get information as they can. You mentioned these actuarial projections. Does that include the cost of college? And I guess what I'm asking is, if we continue to see a rise in college costs, is that going to drain that fund quicker and give people more concern that they're not going to have their money?
So the actuarial projections assume a certain level of inflation of college tuition and mandatory fees. So we have included, you know, an estimate of future growth in tuition and fees as part of the actuarial update. So essentially that's baked into those numbers already. Now, obviously, an actuarial update is a projection as a point in time, and we know that financial markets, investment markets are volatile, that, you know, tuition and fees could be higher or lower than what we project into the future. So that's where I encourage people, you know, once again, when we do an actuarial update, to go check it out each year and to monitor what's going on.
And Eric, I don't mean to put you on the spot. Obviously, you're in a difficult position. I'm sure you've had 1,000 questions coming in this week after this announcement. But I guess the ultimate thing is that people can obviously find out information, find out more. But at the end of the day, based on if changes in actuarial projections, disharmony in the General Assembly, there is concern in people that the money that they have put in, they may not get out for college. There is a chance of that.
You know, one of the things I always tell people, and it's important to keep in mind, is, you know, obviously we can't give financial advice. So I get people ask me to tell them what to do, and obviously I can't give financial advice. And everybody has different, you know, risk thresholds, but there's risk with any investment. So if you have a 529 savings plan, if you have a 401k plan, if you have money in the stock market, you know, all investments come with some level of risk. So I think it's important to keep that in mind as you consider, you know, College Illinois and the plan contracts, or you can consider, you know, other alternatives of how you would save for college. So everything has a level of risk. I think the important thing is to continue to monitor what's going on. Once again, we have information available on our website at collegeillinois.org. People can call us at 877-877-3724. They can email us questions at isac.529help@illinois.gov. And we're always happy to talk with contract holders. And once again, we have a program update that is right on our homepage of our website. And as things change, you know, we make sure that we update that.
All right.
So I think it's important for people to, you know, keep informed.
Eric, we appreciate you having the time and sharing with this information with us today, okay?
Absolutely.
All right, best of luck and happy holidays to you.